Metaphysics. It's a noun, the definition of which is the branch of philosophy that deals with the first principles of things, including abstract concepts such as being, knowing, substance, cause, identity, time, and space. That's the definition of the word metaphysics. But then there's also this definition, the abstract theory with no basis in reality. Both are from the dictionary, you can look them up. But there's another way of defining metaphysics, a way that millions of people around the world prefer to define it, a way of life. Enter the skeptic metaphysician. My name is Will, and I, like Mulder from The X-Files, want to believe. So I've embarked on a journey of discovery. I've talked to people deeply entrenched in the spiritual world. I've thrown myself into weird and wonderful experiences. I've even joined a coven of witches, all in the interest of finding something, anything, that will prove that there's something beyond this physical three-dimensional world we all live in. In modern philosophical terminology, metaphysics refers to the studies of what cannot be reached through objective studies of material reality. And this so interests me, like a lot. Now, I'm not talking about the actual scientific study of things, not material. I'm talking about the more esoteric studies, things like reincarnation, ESP, astral projection, energy healing, clairvoyance, shamanism, spell casting, spirit channeling, astrology, numerology. Well, you get the point. We'll be diving into stuff that is so far from the generally accepted school of thought that I fully expect my mind to be blown. At least that's my hope. To be fully transparent, it's taken me a long time to find a single thing that has given me physical, tangible proof that there's something beyond this world. As hard and as far as I've searched, there's not much out there that's made me a believer. So fingers crossed that someone out there will be able to prove once and for all that this stuff actually exists. So if this kind of thing interests you or intrigues you in any way, I hope you'll join me as I continue in my search. I'm not going to be all mumbo-jumbo about this stuff, but rather really dive into this stuff and see what can come out of it. All, of course, with the utmost respect of those sharing their stories with us. This is The Skeptic Metaphysician. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to The Skeptic Metaphysician. On today's show, we are talking about a weird experience called sleep paralysis. Now, in order to introduce this segment, I've invited my good friend Karen Emsley back on the show to talk about what sleep paralysis may or may not mean before we give you the interview that I did with my friend, who I'll call Bess. Karen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I am so intrigued by this topic.
Oh, yeah. So this is a full disclosure. This is the first of a two-part interview that I did with this particular guest because one led into the other.
Okay.
So the first part of the interview is all about sleep paralysis and what that is and what it was leading into. Right. So what is your experience? What do you know about sleep paralysis?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I had not even heard about this.
Really?
Until you told me.
That's interesting because so many people I've talked to since the interview has said, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. It feels like someone, you wake up and you rush into a panic because you cannot move. You're completely wide awake. Your brain is moving and functioning and thinking, but you cannot send the right functions, the right orders to your body to move.
That would be terrifying.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what they all say happens. They panic because they can't move. It's almost like being in a coma, but being aware.
Wow.
Now,
is this a regular experience for them?
Some people do find that it's a regular experience. Other people have, it happens to them infrequently, but some people think, as is the case with my guest during this particular show, that she felt like there was someone else in the room with her when she woke up.
Oh, that's scary.
It is scary.
I don't like that.
No, I don't either. In fact, I woke up last night just thinking about this in a panic. So, because I don't want anyone in my room that I don't know that is there.
I woke up one time with someone in my room that shouldn't have been there.
That's a good point.
It was terrible.
Yeah, that's a story for another time, but that was a terrifying story. But mm-hmm. But this was specifically, she felt like it wasn't a physical presence. It was someone from the spiritual world there.
Ooh, that's almost even more creepy. Well, did she feel like it was a good presence or a bad presence?
She didn't say, but later on in the conversation, she did talk about the fact that her brother had passed away. So I put two and two together, and I'm thinking maybe that was the case. However, when doing research into sleep paralysis, in order to release this episode, I found lots of accountings that it felt like someone was sitting on your chest.
Oh my gosh.
Not allowing you to move. And there's a lot of visual representations of this in ancient times of a demon of some sort, like sitting on your chest. Yes. Yes. So,
oh, that's awful. Really? I don't want that to ever happen to me. right.
So this started happening to her. And of course, she panicked. She started, but it was only for a few seconds, right? It wasn't like you're there for an hour. That would be death.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not like 10 minutes or anything.
It's not. It's just a few seconds, apparently. But still, those few seconds feel like an eternity to you because you physically cannot move. Right?
Wow.
So she, of course, did what any sane human being would do, and she turned to Uncle Google to find out what was going on with her. And her research into these kinds of things led from sleep paralysis to another thing that ultimately ended up in astral projection. Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's the joke in this whole thing, because it leads into the fact that this could perhaps be the first step towards out-of-body experiences.
Okay, so if you know this ahead of time,
yeah,
then it might not be so bad.
Well, yes, but she didn't, right? And in full disclosure, this person, who I've also known for a long time, is unbelievably pragmatic. She is one of those people that she's much more of a skeptic than I am even. Right?
Okay.
But she was so absolutely 100% convinced that this was happening. It was not a dream. It was not her wishful thinking. This is 100% fact to her.
And it's happened multiple times?
Multiple times. Multiple times. And she also talks about this vibrational experience that she's having after the fact. So much so that she was vibrating in her bed and her husband turned to her and says, "Are you on your phone or something? Because you're moving the bed." Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It absolutely fascinating to me. So rather than waste any more time, let's just go ahead and introduce Karen. Thank you again for coming on the show to introduce the interview. But without further ado, here is my interview with Bess about sleep paralysis. Welcome. I'm excited to have you with me once again as I explore some of the mysteries that the metaphysical world has to offer. Now, the universe has once again conspired to derail my carefully laid plans to release certain episodes in a certain order. And I promise that all those great episodes that have already been recorded will be released as soon as the universe allows me to. But as is so often the case, when you open up yourself to the flow absolutely takes over. And this show, absolutely no different. Now, 2 weeks ago, I shared my good friend's 1111 Decree Meditation, which opened me up to a fantastic interview with April Hanna of Path 11 TV about life after death. Now, no sooner did I complete that interview that the universe tapped me on the shoulder and whispered again that, hey, you're not going to be releasing your past life regression tape like you first thought either this week. Because after speaking about life after death with April, nothing less than a continuation of a sort of that conversation needed to come next. Enter my next guest. Her story is one that she's sharing with the world for the first time. I'm incredibly honored that she's accepted my invitation to come out, as it were, to share her story with you as she did with me. I won't spoil it in the introduction because it's just too good not to have it shared in the proper order like she did with me. So without further ado, I'm thrilled to introduce my guest, whom we're going to call Bess. Bess, so wonderful to have you on the show.
Hi, Will. Thank you for having me. And I do have to say, I am a bit nervous since this is my first time publicly speaking about my story.
Well, I can certainly understand that, but I can assure you that most of the people that will be listening to this episode will be very interested in what you have to say and will not think anything strange of the story that you're about to tell, because we are all in our own ways searching for that something which you very certainly have found. Now, the difference is whether you look at it in the same way that some people look at it or not, right? So, and that's some of the things that we'll touch on. But let's start at the beginning so as to not spoil the surprise. Suffice it to say that this has something to do with the conversation that April Hanna and I had last time about where the consciousness was being stored, whether it was in the body or elsewhere. Let's leave it there. First and foremost, love for you to share your story with the audience. Start with your brother passing away, right, in 2008. But then you had something happen called the Great Buzzing Event, which I love. Maybe I should just stop talking and let you get a word in. So, Bess, tell us your story.
Well, you know, I think I shared with you that my story actually started when I was a little girl, that I've always suffered from sleep paralysis. And I'm 51 years old now, and so my earliest memories are waking up in my childhood bed, unable to move, and absolutely convinced that somebody was standing at the foot of the bed watching me, which apparently it's a very common feeling for people that experience sleep paralysis. Now, Will, have you ever had sleep paralysis? Are you familiar with that feeling?
I'm familiar with the term. I've never experienced it firsthand. And I've got to say, as a young child, to experience that, it must have been absolutely terrifying.
It was. And people that experience sleep paralysis frequently attach fear with the episode. So you're sleeping and suddenly you become awake, but you cannot move. You can't even open your eyes, but you're totally aware of your surroundings. You can hear what's happening around you. You can feel the sheet on top of you, but you cannot move. So that is what sleep paralysis is. This is a well-documented thing that happens to millions of people all over the world. Doctors have studied it. They're the ones that gave it the term sleep paralysis. And the idea is that your brain awakens before your body does. And when you sleep, they theorize that your brain kind of puts your body in this immobile state. That way, when you're dreaming, you're not busy acting out your dreams. And so that's where the paralysis comes in. And so when you awake before your body does, it takes a few moments for your body to catch up to where your brain is. So when I would have these episodes when I was young, of course, I had no idea what they were. I would tell my mom and dad about them, and they had no idea what it was either. So they just say, oh, honey, you were just dreaming. It's going to be okay. Go back to bed. So I would have these every few months, maybe my entire life. And it wasn't until the invention of the internet that I could actually Google what was happening and found out the term sleep paralysis. It was common, and some of the fears and attachments that went along with it, that it felt like somebody was standing there watching you. So anyway, that was when my story began.
So that was a very scientific explanation for what sleep paralysis is. And it very eloquently stated, and it makes great sense. Now I'm rethinking whether or not I've experienced it. A lot of times when I felt that something like that, I was just thinking maybe I was recovering from the night before the drinking binge, but maybe there's something to it. I don't know. No.
This is one of those things. You're not unsure if you've ever had sleep paralysis. If you have actually experienced it, you know 1,000%. You have woken up and been unable to move, and your brain goes into panic mode with, oh my God, I've got to move, I've got to move, and you're trying to force yourself to move until you snap out of it. And sleep paralysis really only lasts a few seconds, but it feels like an eternity when you're in it. But there is no guesswork. You know, I one time asked my husband, I said, have you ever had sleep paralysis? And he goes, well, I think maybe I did. And so I knew instantly he never had. It's kind of like asking somebody if they've ever been in a car accident. There's no, I think maybe I have. No, you know 100% if you have been in a car accident. Sleep paralysis is the exact same thing. There is no guesswork involved.
Right. Similarly to what some of the things that we're going to talk about moving forward, probably every step of the way, there really is no, well, maybe I felt it. It's you know for a fact whether or not this happened to you or not. So that's a constant in your story. So when you encountered those, when you had the sleep paralysis, you mentioned it was just a couple of seconds. Did you ever have times where it was an extended period of time where you're scared, your fear increased as the time passed?
Not for more than just a few seconds, no. So for me, even though it felt like a long time, it really was just a few seconds.
Okay. Because you hear stories of people losing jobs because they couldn't physically get up out of bed because of the sleep paralysis and things like that. So that's not something that you encountered. This was a lot more mild than something like that.
Yeah. So, or at least the state that I was in was a much shortened state than maybe what you're referring to.
Okay. All right. So we know now that most of your life, if not all your life, most of your life, you've experienced sleep paralysis on occasion. How often would it happen?
Oh, every few months, my entire life.
Very regularly then. It wasn't something that happened once a decade or something.
No. Very regularly. And it was something, you know, that I only a few times got the sensation that somebody was standing there. Most of the time, I would just wake up panicked because I couldn't move, and you would try everything to move any type of muscle to wake up.
Okay, so then I've got to ask, what's with the sensation of someone standing there? If you had a very scientific explanation for what sleep paralysis is, but you've not explained the presence of someone standing by your bed, what could possibly
So it's a very commonly reported feeling by people who have sleep paralysis. In fact, if you go back through some of the stories that go throughout, kind of that were reported over the decades and centuries of what they believe were episodes of sleep paralysis, it's very common to feel like a demon or somebody was standing on your chest holding you down. There's all sorts of witchy and spiritual things that go along with it. So I think it's a very common feeling.
So you've experienced sleep paralysis, but wait, there's more, right? Something else happened after that.
Yeah. So my older brother passed away in 2008, and he was 3 years older than me. And we were quite close. He actually, as grown adults, he lived just a few houses down from me. And so we raised our children together. And we were in the hospital at the same time when my son and his son were born. So we were quite close. And he died unexpectedly in 2008. He was traveling on a plane, got home, felt sick. It turned out he had contracted strep A, which was resistant to antibiotics. It's the same thing Jim Henson died from. And so he passed within just a few days.
Wow.
So it was very unexpected. And it really rocked, you know, as it would any family. My parents were living with us at the time, which was a godsend for me to be able to be there to be their support system and vice versa. But, you know, I think people underestimate the passing of a sibling and the effect it has. So my best way to describe how it affected me, I've got two older brothers, one of them passed, and it felt like really a third of me had been ripped away. Hmm. My other brother was the other third. So, you know, you divide our child into thirds, and a third of me was just gone. And so it was difficult to deal with. But interestingly enough, whenever I dreamed, and I think I mentioned this to you, that I was always cognizant that my brother had passed. So when Grant, it was my brother Grant, when he would be in my dream, I would be aware that he was no longer alive and he was visiting the dream. And this was unique to him because I had other relatives, my father that passed, later passed, you know, aunts, uncles, that I never had that recognition in the dream of him having passed, or them having passed when they were like visiting in the dreams. But with my brother, it was always very assured, very cognizant during the dream that he was no longer here, that he was just visiting, which I kind of found unusual that I was always aware of that in my dreams. I definitely do feel like his consciousness was visiting mine, especially when it came to the great buzzing event. There's no other way for me to describe it. So to make a long story short, I'd had a mammogram that had come back irregular. I was very worried about it. I was convinced I had breast cancer. You know, I was waiting for them to reconfirm the ultrasound and all the follow-up tests to tell me that I was, you know, having to go in for treatment for breast cancer. So I was very concerned about it. So I was dreaming one night that my brother, Grant, who was dead, was sitting next to my bed telling me, "Don't worry about it. I've taken care of the cancer. You don't need to be stressed over it." When all of a sudden I woke up in a sleep paralysis episode, panic started to set in, as it always does when I'm frozen in bed and can't move. But the difference here was suddenly along the back of my neck, there was this very loud buzzing. I felt it physically, the vibrations, and I heard it. And it was so loud that it was almost like when your cell phone buzzes. It was almost like my husband was holding a buzzing cell phone to the back of my neck, and it freaked me out. And that enabled me to wake up wide awake, freaking out, because I'd never, ever had such a strong, intense physical sensation in sleep paralysis before.
So you heard the buzzing, but did you feel the buzzing, or is it?
I felt the buzzing. I heard the buzzing. And it was intense. Right. I have, from that point forward, two different types of vibrations that are going on, which had me going to the doctor and trying to find out what all these physical symptoms were. first of all, it scared me so much that I didn't want to go back to bed. The next night, I didn't want to go to sleep because I was worried it was going to happen again. And it wasn't until the day after that that I finally said, let me just Google it. So I put in to Google the words sleep paralysis and vibrations. I'd never done that.
Didn't say you had cancer, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't say I had cancer. And by the way, the mammogram and the ultrasound came back clear. I was completely fine. So he took care of my cancer. Yeah. But I put in Google sleep paralysis and vibrations. I'd never done that before. I'd never had reason. I never even thought to do that. I mean, why would I? Why would I add the word vibrations? And suddenly this whole new world opened to me. Apparently, there were millions of people around the world that were experiencing the exact same physical sensations as I was. Waking up in sleep paralysis and having these intense vibrations. I call them the buzzing vibrations to distinguish from another sensation that I have. And these are so intense that, well, we used to live in Florida. Do you remember going body surfing at the beach and you'd have a wave that would pound down on you?
Sure.
It would almost be as intense as those waves in the surf pounding down on you. Wow. I mean, they are so intense. I'm like, science has to have been investigating these because this is really happening to me. What the heck is going on? And so that began my search to try and figure out physically what was happening to me. Because I'm not religious, I'm since become very spiritual, but at the time, I needed a physical explanation for what was happening to me.
Right. No, makes sense. Some people in the audience may already be connecting the dots. I've not heard it as a buzzing. I had heard it more as a whooshing or a sound of water almost.
Which tracks with my description of describing it almost like the surf pounding down on you. You know, it can feel that way. So after I read about it and figured out, okay, maybe I'm not dying, maybe I'm not having a seizure in my sleep, I started trying to recreate the feeling. Now, I've never been successfully able to put myself in sleep paralysis. It always happens on occasion. So I was trying to figure out how to recreate these vibrations, these intense buzzing vibrations. So I started reading and they talked about meditating. So I began meditating on a daily basis. One guy described, before you reach the vibrations, you need to be fully relaxed. And then it feels like this blanket gets laid over you and you feel the chills going down your body and then it sets in. So I tried to recreate all this stuff with very little success at first. But I do believe that with that daily practice of the meditation, I eventually got to where I could achieve those buzzing vibrations. But something interesting started happening in my body. I believe some of your guests have described this inner blissful feeling. And that was something that I started having on a waking basis. And I described them to my husband, and these are just the regular vibrations. These are not the buzzing vibrations. But I started having, even when I was awake, kind of this butterfly feeling. So that pump of adrenaline you get when suddenly you have these butterflies in your stomach, I would have these very gentle butterfly vibrations that really felt wonderful. But I'd have them all the time. And that's when I started getting worried about MS or Parkinson's. And that's when I finally headed to the doctor. I'm like, oops, I'm having, these internal tremors all the time. I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with me because I actually feel so good, so blissful with them. But can we rule out anything? So, I talked with her. She said, if you were MS or Parkinson's, you'd have some warning signs in there. So you're probably okay. You're probably just feeling really healthy. I mean, she had no other explanation for it.
So you're feeling these butterflies, like you call them, mm-hmm. literally all the time still?
Right now as I'm sitting here. Yeah. Yeah. They're a really gentle, wonderful, wonderful feeling. And sometimes they're more intense than others. So particularly when I'm still. So if I'm meditating or getting ready to sleep at night, I can just feel the vibrations running up and down my body. I mean, into my legs. I can feel the blood rushing in my feet. You're probably going to have some listener, that's some doctor that's going to contact you to let you know that you need to let me know that I'm dying of some rare disease. But
I think you would have found that out just when you Googled it.
But I mean, in my arms, I can feel them all over. And it's a very gentle, very peaceful, just blissful feeling. I truly think when you read about these ancient mystics talking about the good vibrations, I truly think this is what they're talking about. Because they are a physical sensation that I have.
And this is something that people have been striving to achieve for lifetimes. And you just happen to stumble on it.
Well, stumble on it. And I'm not really sure. I mean, I can't claim that I'm awakened. I can't claim that I'm enlightened or anything. I just know that I have some butterflies that are there all the time and they make me feel wonderful.
You bring up a good point. I personally, and as we continue in the conversation, I think more people will understand. I personally think that perhaps you are more awakened than you think you are or that you're aware of because of everything that's leading up to this point. You're so pragmatic that you're trying to explain it in a very scientific manner, which makes sense to my scientific mind. But at the end of the conversation, we'll touch on this again, because I would challenge anyone listening in to not say, wow, at the end of it. I want that. Because to describe your feelings as one of bliss, right? You listened to the Kundalini expert that I had on. You've listened to the Reiki practitioners. They are all talking about that euphoria. That's what the ascended masters, that's what we've all aspire to. But you walk around in that state all the time.
Yeah, I do. And it's funny because sometimes at night it's a little distracting. Because I'll be ready to go to bed. And one night, it was particularly annoying, for lack of a better word. It was vibrating so much inside that my husband said, are you doing something? And I said, no, I'm just laying here. And he goes, are you sure? I said, well, I'm sitting here feeling my vibrations. And he goes, I can feel those. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe the air conditioner was running and I don't know, something, but he claimed he could feel it through the mattress. Now, it hasn't happened again since, but, or maybe it's just I do have Parkinson's and I was shaking and didn't realize it. So, you mentioned the Reiki practitioners, the Kundalini master, and I agree with you. Every guest that I've listened to that you've had on really are describing similar physical symptoms to what I have experienced. And it's interesting that each one of them kind of has a different take on it. I believe matter cannot be created nor destroyed. So this energy inside me, I mean, I believe it has a purpose, and I totally believe in a life after death and consciousness beyond the body, but I believe it's based in science.
Yeah. And in the conversation that I had with April last week also, we talked about the fact, I believe it was Arthur C. Clarke that said, any technology far enough advanced can seem like magic to those not understanding it. So there is a very real probability, I have to face it. I've now in how many episodes in, I now have to face the fact that there is a real probability that we just don't know enough about, maybe it's quantum physics. Maybe all these experiences that we're having are perfectly natural parts of us remembering who we are and where we come from and where we go to next. But so many of us are living our lives in an ego-driven, judgmental capacity that isn't allowing ourselves to open up to the experiences that are truly our birthright, right? Things that we, it's part of us. It's who we are and it's our natural state and we're just cut off from it. So the more I talk to folks like you that bring these experiences to my consciousness, the more I'm finding, like I mentioned in my intro, that it's becoming a snowball, which is a wonderful experience for me, because starting something just on a let's check it out basis now suddenly has become truly a life path for me. We've talked about your great buzzing event and the vibrations, and you then started to try to, you mentioned, recreate them, and you ended up being able to do so by meditation. You started eating more cleanly. You moved to a mostly plant-based diet. You tried to make sense out of some of this stuff.
Yeah. So in my efforts to recreate the vibrations, I stopped drinking alcohol altogether. I mean, I had wine at night, like most house moms do, you know, most working moms do. So I gave up drinking completely because I didn't want any altered states of mind affecting. I also started eating better and exercising more. Part of my research led me to, of course, Robert Monroe. You and I have discussed his journeys out of the body and then his work with the CIA and the government to help them attempt to achieve these vibrations, etc. And Thomas Campbell, who was a physicist, a scientist. One of the things I liked about Bob Monroe was he was very similar to me. When it first started happening, he went to his doctor. He's like, what the heck's happening to me? And they ruled out any kind of illness or sickness. And then when he was tasked with trying to help others do the same thing, he said, I want this scientifically documented. So he brought in scientists to help with this. And Thomas Campbell was one of them. And Thomas Campbell has written extensively about, you know, the experiences and lots of YouTube videos. So I became a big fan of his. And one of the things that he noted was the candidates that seemed to have the greatest success were in the most optimum health physically. And so that was a sign to me, maybe I need to eat better and exercise. So that's why I added that part in to it.
That makes perfect sense. But you didn't just stop there. You actually did your own research. You did research on neuroscience. You researched lucid dreaming, Kundalini.
I was looking for my people, Will, and I could not find them.
Yeah. I can understand that 100%. And then you stumbled on the Gateway Project in your research. And that to me is not only mind-blowing and incredibly fascinating, but a little scary at the same time, because some of this stuff is not, I mean, it's out there, right? It's public knowledge. People, Freedom of Information Act, you can look for it yourself. But talk to us about the Gateway Project. It was a CIA thing, right? So what was that about?
It goes all the way back to like the 1920s or 30s or maybe even 40s in Russia, where I don't remember the doctor's name, but he's cited in all of this research. He started a program where he believed that people could do what's called remote viewing, where I could sit here with my eyes closed and I could tell you what was happening in another room. And so they became very interested in this, to develop this in order to develop soldiers and spies to be able to do that. I mean, what better way to have a spy than one sitting in Russia and then spying on enemies? So America became aware of this research and they decided they needed to play catch up. So they enlisted a lot of universities to help with these studies. They became aware of Robert Monroe, who's kind of the father of what we call astral projection. And they brought him in to actually train personnel on how to achieve the vibrations. And the idea is that these vibrations, the intense buzzing that I'm talking about, not my feel-good butterfly vibrations, but the intense buzzing that happens during sleep paralysis, they claimed was just your, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call this soul. But your soul or your consciousness or your awareness to actually leave your body, leave your physical body.
I've got to stop you for a second because I think we need to stress what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about two of the world's most powerful countries, their governments, funding research into astral travel. They call it remote viewing because maybe, like you said, send a spy into another country, an unseen spy. What better way to spy on a country? But at the end of the day, we're talking about lots and lots of money being thrown into a project that was researching a non-physical sensation or non-physical result, which was having your soul, your consciousness, your whatever, go outside of your body, travel an undetermined amount of space and distance, and get actual hard evidence and bring it back, right? So astral travel, we're talking about things that everyone out there in the world is saying, this is all a whole bunch of malarkey. These are the two of the world's strongest, largest, most powerful countries spending a lot of money to try to get this thing proven.
You know, well, yes, exactly. And I mean, it's a little bit mind-boggling when you think about it. But let's think about, we've seen it in the media a lot lately, near-death experiences, people claiming when they're on the operating table, floating out and seeing what the doctors were doing, the life-saving things that were done to save their lives. So everybody's familiar with this concept. Whether they choose to believe it or not is a different thing. But the CIA was then purposely trying to recreate the circumstances where somebody could purposely and willingly travel out of their body. And they even had targets set up in a different room, and they had varying degrees of success. But the Monroe Foundation actually set up a school where you could go. It's still active today, where you could go and they will teach you the steps to learn how to travel out of your body. I do believe that this is something that anybody could ultimately learn to do. I think it's kind of like playing the piano or a musical instrument. I think there are some people that are just phenoms that do it naturally. I think there are those, probably like myself, that have somehow stumbled upon being fairly, you know, adept at it. And then there might be people who, you know, won't barely have to work at it. But I do think it is a skill that anybody can acquire. So Bob Monroe and Thomas Campbell, you know, they were tasked with teaching CIA American soldiers this task, and apparently did have fairly good success with it. It supposedly continues today. You know, who knows if that's true? But to me, it offered kind of a stamp of confirmation that what I was experiencing was not in my head. It was not something that I was just dreaming or, you know, hallucinating about. That really was happening, enough to where, you know, the American government said, yeah, this is real. Mm. We're doing this.
Right. Okay. This has all been leading to this point. Can you confirm that you have traveled outside of your body?
I can confirm that I've had two experiences that were purposeful where I experienced myself outside my body. Yes.
We need to pause there because this is where it starts getting really interesting. I want to be sure to give the right attention to this next part of the story. So the only way to do that is to stop this conversation here and pick it up again on our next episode. Next week, you'll be able to listen to the actual experiences that Bess had with astral projection or out-of-the-body travel. She'll fill us in on what the two experiences she had were in detail, as well as how she did it, how this could have been something that runs in her family, and what she thinks this means in regards to life after death, along with a ton of other stuff. I mean, this is just half of the conversation, so imagine how much more we actually talked about that you can listen to next week on part two. Believe me, friends, this is not the one that you want to miss. Now, before I go, I wanted to share something fun with you. On every show, I talk about how you can leave me voice messages via SpeakPipe. And this past week, I received one that I thought you'd all get a kick out of. I know I certainly did. Really wanted to share this with you. But rather than spoil the surprise, I'll just go ahead and let you listen to it. So here we go.
Hello. I'm in the middle of recording your podcast episode, reviewing your podcast, The Skeptic Metaphysician. And I just want to tell you that I think you're off to a really good start because the content of your podcast got me to do deep dive research on something that has nothing really to do with my show. So the fact that you evoked emotion out of me like that is a really good sign. So stay tuned for your grades coming up on this Friday's episode of Am I Canceled at 8 a.m. Eastern Time-ish, Eastern Standard Time, or whenever Buzzsprout decides, or not Buzzsprout, Buzzsprout is awesome, whenever Spotify and Apple and all those places decide that it's time for the episode to be released, then it will be released on Friday. Anyway, great leaving this message. Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right, so friends, you heard it here first. This show is being reviewed by the Am I Cancelled podcast this Friday. If you're listening to this on premiere date, that's 2 days from now. But if you've come across a show after premiere date, which is likely the case, then you can certainly look for it on your favorite podcatcher app already. I'm also unbelievably surprised and thrilled to hear that the show elicited such a strong emotional response to him already. It means that we're doing our job well. Well, that's all for now. Don't forget to tune into part two of my conversation with Bess, of course, as you've just heard on today's show. You can send me a voice message on speakpipe.com/skepticmetaphysician. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your comments, your questions, or feedback on the show or the guests or anything in particular. If you have a story to tell about an experience that was fantastic, something having to do with the metaphysical that is not easily explained, remember, I love to share people's stories. Would love to share yours too, just like I'm doing here with Bess. So please, feel free to reach out if you'd like to come on the show. You can join me on Facebook at The Skeptic Metaphysician. Links to my social media platforms and SpeakPipe access are all in the show notes as well. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you again on the next episode of The Skeptic Metaphysician. Until then, take care.